This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Thank you for listening. Brand new animated series from Stupid Buddy Studios. Those guys have had so many hits, and this is going to be another one. Crossing Swords. It premieres this Friday, June 12th on Hulu. Joining me right now are the creators, John Harvatin IV and Tom Root. Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, guys. John, I'll start with you. You know, animation has thankfully kept going in COVID-19 through this whole thing. But for stop motion shows, I mean, you got to physically touch and move the characters on a set. So were the majority of these 10 episodes of Crossing Swords shot and edited before COVID-19?
Yeah, good point. Harder than question. Yeah, we were lucky that we got all this stuff. We did all the animation last summer and actually late spring, summer, and early fall. And then they've been kind of sitting in the can for a little bit. So we were ready and waiting to unleash this on the world.
Beautiful. Wow. Yeah, you guys are very fortunate in that. But I love that animation is still going strong through this whole thing. And everybody gets to experience this Friday. Tom, where did the inspiration for this concept come from? And tell everybody about it, because it is wacky and wild.
Well, the inspiration for this actually, I think, dates back almost a decade now. Eventually, it's going to be, I think next year it'll be a full decade since we came up with the idea for Crossing Swords. It went through many names and many iterations, but essentially, when Stupid Buddy Studios formed, Harv and I put our heads together and we talked about what kind of show we would want to make together at this new studio. And Harv was always really captivated by the idea of peg people as a puppet, just by how limited they were and how cute they were, because peg people as toys are really intended for preschoolers because they're really simple. There's nothing to break. They make them so big now that you can't swallow them.
It's the perfect
toy.
Which
didn't used to be the case. Yeah, the perfect toy. But the look of them is really engaging. So we tried to think of, like, what would be the perfect environment for peg people to run around in. And really, we just sort of settled on a sword and sorcery kind of fantasy environment. We tried to pick the kind of environment where you could kind of envision a map full of playsets where our characters could go to a different playset every episode. And it would be really colorful and interesting to look at. And we'd never kind of run out of places to go. And a fantasy world kind of seemed to be the best direction for that. And really, I just started drawing this map of the world on a dry erase board and adding to it. And that map stayed up for months and just sort of kept inspiring us to keep working on this idea. And yeah, this is like 2011. That's how long ago this was now.
Wow.
And eventually it turned into a show. It's a very long story from there, but now it's going to be on Hulu, and we're very excited.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, and you talking about the peg people, you know, they don't have traditional arms and legs. These characters, they move in such unique ways, and they are absolutely engaging to watch. So, John, how were you able to make them move and kind of the objects being in midair and them sort of having to hold things and throw things and being able to pull that off?
Yeah. Well, that's the tricky part. And that's something that we really learned on Robot Chicken is toy animation is something that the studio has done for a while and has done really well. So the trick is to make those little characters not only animatable, but also emote and be things that you can believe in, things that you watch the character talk and you're connecting to them. So, you know, a lot of the expression is with the face, with the eyes and the blinks and things like that and the mouths. We don't have any arms to gesture, so we give them props and things like that they can move around to point to if they need. It gets a little bit tricky in storytelling to, you know, not have any limbs, but like I said, we have to have a sword or a shield that can help. And then we have, you know, there's rigs on rigs on everything. So in post, there's wires on the little props so we can move them around, and there's wires underneath the body so we can have them bounce. And then in post, we have magicians that rub out the wires, and then when we play it back, you can't see them at all. Magic.
It is magic. The magic of animation keeps on going. And Tommy, we're talking about the sets a little bit earlier here. Which of the sets, you know, we've got castles and we've got so many objects and so many details and houses and different residencies. Which of those was the most fun and enjoyable to sort of bring to life from that map and bring it to life on this show?
Well, I think I'm trying to think of an example without giving anything away. The example I'm going to use is we take our characters to a medieval version of Coachella, and we had a lot of fun like deciding what the rules of our rock and roll festival were going to be, like what the rules of the music were going to be, because we don't, our world is not exactly tied to any specific date or country. Our characters speak English. It's not England. They don't live in London. There's no like specifics tying them to anything. It might not even be our Earth. We kind of just ignore the rules. And so we got to make, kind of build from the ground up this rock and roll festival, which shouldn't be happening in a sword and sorcery world. And we had a lot of fun. And so the main stage is this death metal experience. Itself is animated and sort of breathes fire and is really a lot of fun to look at. And that's a lot of fun of the show, is making up our own rules for what it's going to look like and deciding when we've broken a rule that we made up for ourselves in the first place.
Did you go to the real Coachella, you know, and think about the experiences you've had at concerts to put in those details for this big Coachella-type extravaganza here?
I would say my concert going days are probably over, but, or at least my rock and roll festival days are over. We've got writer's room, and everyone's got a story about their favorite rock concert moments and festival moments, and
sure.
Just the debauchery that they've encountered. And
Root's lucky he's able to live his life through the other writers and then share it with us
vicariously and then put it through into the characters. That's interesting. You don't have sort of a specific set date or time or things like that, because I wanted to ask you guys, you know, on Robot Chicken, you're able to throw in pop culture references and make stories out of current shows and current movies and what's going on right now. But even though this show is a more old-fashioned setting, you talk about bringing in Coachella and doing your perspective on that. John, is it tricky to incorporate these modern references, or because you don't have rules, you just say, you know what, we're just going to do whatever feels right to us?
Well, I think it's, whatever feels right. But I think also taking the spirit of Robot Chicken, you know, when we do the show, we find things that are more timeless and not necessarily of the moment, you know?
Mm.
So, like, an example is, like, if you're making fun of, like, George Bush, for example, you make fun of the character of him. You don't make fun of, like, a specific thing that's, like, at the moment. I don't, even though George Bush, I guess, is a little bit a while ago. But the point is, you find things that are kind of timeless and make fun of that. I don't think you put in, like, a Shrek song to date things necessarily, but... Or not Shrek song, what was that? All Star?
Oh, yeah, that was in Shrek, yeah.
Smash Mouth, yeah.
Yeah, Smash Mouth, there you go. So, like, you don't want to seem of this specific time or a certain time. You're just kind of, like, playing with the idea of it, dancing around it.
In the same episode as the Rock Festival, there are characters standing in line asking the princess to, do favors for them, and one of them is clearly asking the princess to get Brendan Dassey from Making a Murderer on Netflix out of jail. But we don't use, like, we would never use the word Netflix on our show. We're making fun of the fact that we're not really talking about the specific show, but we want to remind people of that show.
Right.
Clearly the viewers and the writers live in the modern world, but the characters are never going to, like, drop the facade that they're, living in this fantasy world that doesn't know what Netflix is.
Sure, sure. And yes, and stress the fact that Crossing Swords is on Hulu, which is it's on Hulu this Friday, June 12th. All the episodes, I'm with the creators right now here on the LCJ Q&A. You know, Hulu, interestingly, just starting to really get going in terms of animation. They had a few things in the past, but with Solar Opposites and now Crossing Swords here on Hulu, they're getting into more adult animation. Tom, what do you think interested Hulu about this show and bringing you guys on board?
Well, I think adult animation is such a proven performer at this point. If you look at the history of Adult Swim, Adult Swim, of course, was a big success, but, you know, it was anchored by Family Guy. And, you know, Family Guy had already found success at Fox on Sunday nights with The Simpsons, which is had already been a success for a decade or more. And it's just sort of this rock-solid thing. Like, if you have your adult animation house in order, it kind of can run forever, which I think is a pretty well-learned lesson at this point. And I think, Hulu's not the only one trying to get adult animation up and running, which is good for all of us who make it. And so we were really pleased that they were taking it seriously and they wanted to work with, you know, creators like Justin Roiland and get high quality stuff on their platform. And there's more to come, too. So it's going to keep building and building. We've heard a lot of good stuff coming down the wire. So it's really going to be an adult animation destination for years to come.
That's cool. That's cool. And you mentioned The Simpsons. We'll get into The Simpsons a little bit here later on the LCJ Q&A, but I want to ask you guys more about Crossing Swords. And John Nicholas Holt voices the main character, Patrick. It's not his traditional British accent, though. How was it sort of working with him on this kind of high-pitched, upbeat American voice and very distinct voice here?
Yeah, well, that's funny. Root and I had a really good, real fun time like trying to find a voice that felt original. And yeah, it is kind of funny how, like, he's such a good actor and he's so fun to work with and he's got such a great voice and we just strip it away and have him, you know, give him an American accent, which to us, it just sounds original and funny. And, you know, we were working with him and trying to find like what voice to use. And like Rick said before, you know, this doesn't really take place anywhere. And we like the idea that it's just, a little bit strange. So I think just finding a voice that sounded original and taking away his charming voice was just satisfying for us. And he was really good at it, too. Like, it just sounds different, you know?
Yeah, ways you can do the dialogue deliveries and things like that and timing and all that. Yeah, it definitely works. And the cast you have assembled here, Luke Evans is on the show, Adam Pally, he's been here on the LCJ Q&A, Yvette Nicole Brown, Tony Hale. So Tom, who surprised you the most in the voice booth when it came to where they took their character?
Boy, that's a good question. I think when Tony Hale is in the booth, nobody's surprised that he's a genius. Because there's so much evidence that he's a genius, but like we knew he was our Blarney, but then like you know, for budget reasons, everyone does three characters, and so we would have to give Tony like these sort of characters with one or two lines, and he would bring as much attention and kind of creativity to those afterthought characters as he would to his main character. And suddenly, like the example I'm thinking of is in the first episode, there's a character who's just nailing flyers up in the public square. And that's Tony. The voice he chose for that guy not only was really funny, but that he seemed to give that character this kind of whole inner world and backstory that you can kind of tell is there.
Yeah.
And we didn't write him that way. Tony just sort of made him a full character, and all of a sudden we wanted to start including the flyer guy in other episodes. And that was really surprising. And it's like, oh, we can write it, and it can be, you know, as good as possible, but then, like, you put it in the hands of a great actor, and it becomes something way better than you thought.
He wouldn't change the lines at all. He just changed kind of how you say it or inflections on other words and changed the tone completely and made it really funny, like really added to it.
That's great, because I like the Flyer guy. He's one of my favorite characters, so I'm glad he put in the effort into even the smaller characters. That shows that he cares. He's done so much voice work lately with Toy Story 4 and Archibald and you guys. That's really good to hear. So, Simpsons just celebrated its 30th anniversary, and you guys directed the two Robot Chicken couch gags that aired on the show in 2013 and 2017. I rewatched them again the other day, and they're so fun. And where, honestly, either of you guys can jump in on this, where do those experiences of making those rank among everything you've done in your career, and what was sort of the pressure like, especially going into the first one, in making sure that it was as good as it could possibly be?
For me, The Simpsons is this comedy touchstone that was so influential. I was at exactly the right age to love it. You know, I would record every single episode on VHS and watch them over and over and over. VHS was a form of media where you would record through a magnetic tape.
I think my grandparents said that.
To be able to come up with an idea for this, for The Simpsons, and then to have real actors from The Simpsons do the voices and get to go to the studio and work with names that you'd seen on the screen for decades. And then they would actually, like, they took our ideas and they would add to them and make them better. And then they would actually put our idea on the show. It's just like, this never-ending great experience. It's just so much fun to do.
Cool.
It was really crazy because there weren't really any rules that they gave us except, I guess, Homer's hair. But other than that, like, there weren't any rules. So it was a little bit, you know, nerve-wracking because it's like you have this great brand and they're kind of letting you play with them, you know, but it's not just like a parody that we're doing. It's like this is on the show. So, there's, you know, I felt a little bit nervous to, you know, have it turn out and have it be funny and great, but you know, Root and I together, you got some magic right there. I had a great time working with him on the project, and then we got to do it twice, which was a lot of fun.
That's so cool that they basically gave you free rein, and sort of like the free rein that's going into Crossing Swords a little bit. So what will you guys be doing on Friday? Crossing Swords debuts this Friday on Hulu. Are you going to have a watch party, do some social media type things? What are your plans?
Yeah, Root, what are we doing?
Well, I say we rent out a club, fill that place shoulder to shoulder. Well, clearly because of the pandemic, we're going to probably do a lot of nothing. We'll get on social media and celebrate. And it's a really big deal, and I'm sure we'll spend all day, you know, reaching out to people who helped make it. And I mean, there are hundreds of people who helped make it, who deserve a lot of credit. You know, it's just going to be a day to think about this path that we've taken to get to this point. So many twists and turns in this road to get here. So it's, I think it's just going to be a day of reflecting on our many good and bad choices that brought us to this monumental occasion.
Yeah, sitting in our pajamas at home.
Yeah.
But you'll enjoy it. Yeah, you're here. You got it. After a decade, Crossing Swords is finally here for everybody over a certain age to watch it, and they will enjoy it. It's on Hulu this Friday, June 12th. John Harvatine IV and Tom Root, the creators of the show, thank you for being on the LCJ Q&A today. Congrats on this and all you've done in the world of animation.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Lights Camera Jackson. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com. As always, follow me on Twitter at LCJ Reviews and Instagram at LightsCamJackson. See you next time for more of the LCJ Q&A.